Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Ranta Raja Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridas Maharaj ki, Go Preman. Okay. Where is everyone? There's only about 15 of us here. Yeah, because it was Vyasa Puja today. And Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj has just arrived. Okay, taking out the class a bit. Okay, so I apologize we didn't have class last night. I've only missed, I think, two classes in the last 12 years, so it's very rare that we miss a class. So tonight, we'll cover the whole of chapter 5. So we'll do the whole 28 verses to make up for last night, so we get the whole. Okay, so. Any points from last week, from what we've discussed? Any other points?
Humility. Sorry. Humility reconciles all difficult situations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay, so we're continuing with chapter 5. Chapter 4, we heard about Ambarish Maharaj and the glories of Maharaj Ambarish and how he was challenged by Devasa Muni. But Devasa Muni attacking Maharaj Ambarish and being unsuccessful was then turned on by the chakra, Sudarshan, of Lord Vishnu, who chased him around the universe. He took shelter of Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and then finally he went to Vaikuntha. But he could not get relief. And finally, the only place he could get relief was?
Ambarish himself.
Yeah, he had to go back to Maharaj Ambarish and pay obeisances. And then Maharaj Ambarish forgave him. So in this chapter 5, we'll hear tonight, how he approaches Maharaj Ambarish and Maharaj Ambarish's exchange with Devasa. Okay. So chapter 5. Shukadev Goswami said, when thus advised by Lord Vishnu, Devasa Muni, who was very much harassed by the Sudarshan Chakra, immediately approached Maharaj Ambarish. Being very much aggrieved, the Muni fell down and clasped the king's lotus feet. So what the Bhagavatam is teaching us is that the only way to overcome Vaishnava Parad is that you must fall at the feet of the Vaishnava that you have offended. There is no other way. You can't go to the deities or to Krishna himself. You cannot go to the Lord and expect to get forgiveness for your aparads. The only way to get forgiveness is to go to the Vaishnava who you have offended. You can't go to different Vaishnavas. You can't expect that you can just generically offer obeisances to Prabhupada or your guru, or you can pray to the... you have to approach the guru. Sorry. You have to approach the devotee that you have offended. So that is the only means. It is tried and tested. So whenever one has fallen... when everyone has committed offense at the feet of a devotee, he has to go to that devotee. And Harinam Chintamani says, you must have tears in your eyes. So what does that mean? That means you must be sincere. And sometimes you go to a devotee, and if you're not sincere in offering your obeisances, if they're not tears in the eyes, means if there's not genuine sincerity, the devotee may not feel that you're sufficiently repentant, and he may not forgive you properly. So there has to be a proper mood of repenting. So then it is described that you must fall at the feet of the devotee, which means you have to show your humility. And Prabhupada points this out. Prabhupada says, whenever you fall at someone's feet, If you fall down and touch someone's feet, immediately they become favorable towards you, or favorably disposed towards you, compassionate towards you. That's the nature. So the mood of a devotee is that whenever we offend someone, then we go to that person who we've offended, sincerely beg forgiveness and touch the feet of that person, and then we will be forgiven. Yeah? Krishna Chakravarti Thakur and Haridas Thakur and the Harinand Chintamani, they point out that if you are sincere, the devotee will forgive you. That's the nature of a devotee, to be soft-hearted. It's the nature of a devotee to be forgiving. So if you are sincere, the devotee will forgive. The only way in which you may not be forgiven is that if you have committed a very big offense to a devotee. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this in the Madhurya Kadambini, that you may go to a devotee, you may beg forgiveness, but still, because the offense is too large, the devotee may not forgive you. So then what do we do under those circumstances? Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, you take shelter of the holy name of Krishna. If the devotee will not forgive you, it means if the offense, it means a very big offense. Generally, devotees will forgive us. But if the offense is very big, and the devotee is feeling that he cannot forgive you, then, and you've done everything you can, then you take shelter of the holy name. And in due course of the whole of time, if you're sincere, the holy name will forgive you. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points that you must continue to serve that devotee. Serve that devotee again and again and again. So the devotee is very upset with you, even if you've committed a small offense, and the devotee forgives you, but you must repeatedly serve that devotee. And by continuously serving that devotee will be appeased. And they will forgive you. So that is the system. So we see here that Ambarish Maharaj, he's been approached by Devasa Muni. Devasa committed the offense out of pride, out of ego, out of a feeling of superiority, that he's feeling, I am superior to Maharaj Ambarish. And feeling that he is superior, because in one sense he is, being a Brahmana, and Maharaj Ambarish is a Kshatriya. So he's feeling superior, but then he does not, because of that false ego, that contamination, he cannot see the qualification of Ambarish Maharaj. Even though Ambarish Maharaj may be junior to him in terms of Varna, he is Kshatriya, like that, but still, he does not see his purity or his qualification, his Adhikar. So therefore, he does not go to him in the right mood. And not going to him in the right mood, then he commits an offense. But now, he is rectifying himself, finally, after being chastised, and then he comes to Ambarish Maharaj in the right mood, he begins to offer obeisances. He touches the feet, he has tears in the eyes, he's sincere, and Maharaj Ambarish naturally forgives him. So that is the system the Bhagavatam is teaching us. So this has been mentioned, we've mentioned this many times. Since the first canto, and this is canto 9, so we're about to go into the 10th canto next year by Krishna's mercy, then this theme, this is one of the integral themes of the Bhagavatam. It's been repeated again and again and again. Canto 4, we see the pastime with Sati, Daksha, offending Shiva. Right? We've seen many times. Canto 5, then you see Rahugana offending Jadbharata. There's many pastimes of that, all through the Bhagavatam, where someone is offending another person. Canto 6, where Indra offends Brihaspati. Many. So it is being repeated again and again and again. Now we're in the 9th canto. So again it's being stressed to us. Do not commit offences to devotees. Learn what offences are and learn to avoid committing them. Do not commit offences. If you don't know what the offences are, then you don't know what you're supposed to be avoiding. So devotees need to be educated. What are the 10 offences in chanting the holy name? What are the offences in to the holy Dharma? There are 10 offences to the holy Dharma, there are 10 offences to the holy name. Seva aparads, Rupa Goswami lists 64 offences to the deities. Seva aparads, there's Jiva aparad, Nama aparad, and Vaishnava aparad. Right? Different time. We need to be educated. What are these offenses? So we can avoid committing these offenses. Right? Because offenses, they block your spiritual progress. And more than any, the offense which blocks your spiritual progress more than anything else is Vaishnava Pura. Yeah. So Mahaprabhu says it is Hati Mata. Hati Mata means mad elephant. Yeah, it's mad. The elephant goes crazy and it destroys your garden where you're growing your devotion. Yeah? So what is the fence that we need to keep the elephant out, protect our garden? What is it?
Humility and education.
Yeah, but specifically it's mentioned. What is the fence that we have to keep out so the garden grows nicely, our bhakti grows nicely? Yeah, it is sadhu sangha. Yeah. You need to have association with devotees. Because when you're with devotees, good devotees, right, who give you a good example and purify you by their association, then you learn not to commit offenses. They protect you from committing offenses. So we need to live inside the association of devotees. And we have to learn not to offend the devotees who we associate with. So, any points so far?
So, regarding offense, I heard a story long time back, I read this, some article somewhere. One time on devotee, Srila Prabhupada and asked him, Prabhupada, if I commit an offense unto you, and you can't forgive that offense, what should I do? Prabhupada said, if I can't forgive you, you go to Krishna, Krishna can forgive you. If Krishna cannot forgive you, Radharani can forgive you. There is no offense that you can commit where she can't forgive you. That does not mean that we need to commit offenses, but he said that. I read this.
Yeah, something to that effect. Okay. From memory, I think it was something like, you know, if the offense will not be forgiven, and Prabhupada said, go to Krishna. If Krishna will not forgive, go to Radha. And then Prabhupada said, Radha will not forgive, then I will forgive. But we should avoid offenses. That's the... Any other points? Okay. When Devasa touched his lotus feet, Maharaj Ambarish was very much ashamed. And when he saw that Devasa, attempting to offer prayers because of mercy, He was aggrieved even more. Thus he immediately began offering prayers to the great weapon of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the nature of a devotee. You know? When someone offers him respect, then he offers respect to his superiors. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, we should avoid letting people touch our feet. Prabhupada himself, he was holding large pandals in India, in Mumbai, in Kolkata. And Prabhupada, you know, 30,000 people coming in one night. So then at the end of the pandal program, Prabhupada would walk through the crowd, and thousands of people were there. And then, you know, many people, hundreds of people, trying to touch Prabhupada's feet. And then Prabhupada became sick, because their idea is that, the idea in India is that if you touch the sadhu's feet, it destroys your sins. Your karma goes like that. But then the sadhu becomes sick. So Prabhupada, he actually said to the devotees, do not let them touch my feet. Because Prabhupada would become sick after so many people touching his feet, and all the sinful activities. So Prabhupada taught us that if someone tries to, we should avoid letting people touch our feet. But then Prabhupada said, if it is unavoidable, means if people are very insistent, because, you know, especially Indian people, the culture is to touch people's feet. So, you know, so then Prabhupada said, if they're very insistent, then what can you do? He said, then just pray to the previous acharyas and offer everything to them. So that should be the mood. You know, if someone touches the feet or offers us respect, then we should pass that on. So Ambarish was being offered respect by Devasa. And then what was his mood? Then he would offer respect to Sudarshan Chakra. In other words, a devotee always relinquishes any respect which is given to him, and he offers it back to his superior personalities. He doesn't think, this is for me. That's a real devotee. Because we're not so pure or so advanced, we may not do that. When someone gives respect to us, then we keep that respect for ourselves. As opposed to passing it on to the higher authorities. Any points? Maharaj Ambarish said, O Sudarshan Chakra, you are fire, you are the most powerful sun, and you are the moon, the master of all luminaries. You are the water, earth, and sky. You are the air, you are the five sense objects, sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. And you are the senses also. O most favorite of Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are thousands of spokes, O master of the material world, destroyer of all weapons, original vision of the Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Kindly give shelter and be auspicious to this Brahmana. So that is the nature of a devotee, is that he offers prayers on behalf of others. Actually, Maharaj, or Devasa Muni, he had committed a great offense to Maharaj Ambarish. But Ambarish is showing the true quality of a devotee, and we'll see that in this chapter, in this pastime. A devotee does not accept offense. Even though someone may be offensive towards him, but he does not accept it. Right? He relinquishes that offense. And he simply prays for the benefit of the other person. So that is the devotee's personality. So we see Maharaj Ambarish, what is his consciousness? Even though this person has been very negative towards him and very offensive towards him, what is his consciousness? His consciousness is to pray to the Lord on behalf of that person. So that's exalted consciousness. And that's what Lord Chaitanya is teaching us. Trinada pisunichena, tarora pisihishnuna. You have to be more tolerant than a tree, more humble than a grass. And in that state of mind, you can pray to the Lord for other people. In the nature of the material world is when someone offends us, we maintain that consciousness. We become negative, right? And we think, oh, that person has offended me. We feel pain in our heart. And we may retaliate towards that person. Whereas we see in the Bhagavatam how we should be, through the example of Maharaj Ambarish, what he is teaching us, the example he is teaching us as an Acharya, that we should not be vindictive towards others. When they give us some offense, then we should just pray to Krishna on their behalf. This means you're on this spiritual platform. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, na sochiti, na kangshiti. So when you're on the Brahma Bhuta platform of spiritual realization, then you are na sochiti, na kangshiti. You don't hanker, you do not lament, oh, that person offended me, and you're always offering respect for, you always have goodwill towards others. And you always pray on behalf. You always say, Krishna, please bless this person, that he may advance in Krishna consciousness. So it's an advanced level of consciousness that we need to evolve to and develop. Any points? Okay. O Sudarshan Wheel, you are religion, you are truth, you are encouraging statements, you are sacrifice, and you are the enjoyer of the fruits of sacrifice. You are the maintainer of the entire universe, and you are the supreme transcendental prowess in the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the original vision of the Lord, and therefore you are known as Sudarshana. Everything has been created by your activities, and therefore you are all pervading.
The word Sudarshana means auspicious vision. From Vedic instruction, we understand that this material world is created by the glance of Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sa Aishakta, Sa Ashvita. The Supreme Personality of Godhead glance over the Mahatattva, or the total material energy, and when it was agitated, everything came into existence. Western philosophers sometimes think that the original cause of creation was a chunk, that ex-product. If one thinks of this chunk as the total material energy, the Mahatattva, one can understand that the chunk was agitated by the glance of the Lord. and thus the Lord glance is the original cause of the material creation.
So, any points? So Prabhupada used to say that he would take any opportunity to swing at the materialistic scientists. So seeing his purports repeatedly, this was his mood. And in the final 2 years, mainly, that Prabhupada was with us, 75 to 77, a lot of Prabhupada's energy and time went into forming the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Because Prabhupada was emphasizing that we need to preach to the scientific community. Because that is where the problem, or one of the main problems lies in the age of Kali at this point in time, is that the scientists are the authorities, and they're atheistic, and they're preaching atheistic doctrine. And they basically have authority, and people see them as being the authorities in the world, and they have faith in them. That these are the people that we can trust, and they know what they're talking about, and they will... If you listen to them, actually, they don't know what they're talking about so much. So Prabhupada was very emphatic that we preach to the scientific community, and we develop a institute which can directly preach and try to turn the scientists into theistic scientists, and then that will change the world dramatically. Even when Prabhupada was there, I think it was 75, 76, he was holding a big Pandal program, and Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who was a scientist, devotee scientist, he said, you get up on the stage and you speak. So Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj said, you know, Prabhupada, if I speak in very like scientific terms, people will not understand what I'm saying. And Prabhupada said, that is very good. Because that is what they expect from scientists. In other words, you can get up and the scientists will speak, devotee scientists can speak, no one really knows what they're saying. But they think, oh, very good, he's a scientist. And Prabhupada is saying that's what the modern scientists are like. No one really understands what they're talking about because they sound very intellectual and they're juggling words around, right? That everyone thinks, oh, they're very, and they have faith in them. So that is the nature of the modern scientific preaching. So Prabhupada is very emphatic, and he would always take opportunities in his purports to swing at the scientists. He said that. Any points? Okay. Oh, Sudarshana, you have a very auspicious hub, and therefore you are the upholder of all religion. You are just like an inauspicious comet for the irreligious demons. Indeed, you are the maintainer of the three worlds. You are full of transcendental effulgence. You are as quick as the mind, and you are able to work wonders. I can simply utter the word Namaha, offering all obeisances unto you. Ajay Prabhu.
Disc of the Lord is called Sudarshan because it does not discriminate between high and low criminals or demons. Durvasa Muni was certainly a powerful Brahmana, but his acts against the pure devotee Maharaj Ambarish was no better than the activities of Asuras. As stated in the Shastra, Dharmam Tu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam, the word Dharma refers to the orders or laws given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva Dharman Parityagya Mam Ekam Sharanam Bhaja. Real Dharma is surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, real Dharma means bhakti or devotional service to the Lord. The Sudarshan Chakra is here addressed as Dharma Setave, the protector of Dharma. Maharaj Ambarish was a truly religious person, and consequently, for his protection, the Sudarshan Chakra was free to punish even such a strict Brahmana as Durvasa Muni because he had acted like a demon. There are demons even in the form of Brahmanas. Therefore, the Sudarshan Chakra does not discriminate between Brahmana demons and Shudra demons. Anyone against the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees is called a demon. In the Shastra, we find many Brahmanas and Kshatriyas who acted as demons and have been described as demons. According to Vardik of the Shastra, one has to be understood according to his symptoms. If one is born of a Brahmana father, but his symptoms are demoniac, he is regarded as a demon. The Sudarshan Chakra is always concerned with annihilating the demons. Therefore, he is described as Adhama, Shila Sura, Dhumakshetava. Those who are not devotees are called Adharma Shila. The Sudarshan Chakra is just like an inauspicious comet for all such demons.
Hmm. Any points here? So the point is that Krishna will punish our dharma. Our dharma means irreligion. So wherever irreligion rises, it will be dealt with by Krishna. So in the form of Sudarshana, which is his chakra, his weapon, his ultimate weapon, Krishna punishes demoniac personality. So whether one is a brahmana or a devotee or a non-devotee, then as soon as someone misbehaves and breaks dharma, and does not follow dharma, and as soon as someone offends another devotee, immediately Krishna will respond and react to that person. So it doesn't matter if you are, even if you're a devotee, if you misbehave towards another devotee, immediately Krishna will react and he will punish. So we see Sudarshana, even though there's a highly qualified person in one sense, Devasa is a powerful brahmana, but because he has acted improperly towards Maharaj Ambarish, then immediately there is reaction. Sudarshan comes, the chakra comes and begins to punish. So that is the potency. So wherever it comes up, then Krishna will react and he will punish those persons. Any points? Yeah.
How is it that a thing can take birth as a Brahmin? Brahmin is considered to be Lord of goodness.
No, I mean, it means it's some demoniac quality. Doesn't mean he's a demon. But it's just like us. We're devotees. We're trying to be devotees. But sometimes we act improperly. So it means Devasa is, no, he's not a demon. But he's acting improperly. There's some demoniac tendency. Even Indra's a demigod. He's a devotee. But then sometimes he doesn't act properly. He commits offenses. Tries to flood Vrindavan. So you don't have to be a demon to act like a demon. Sometimes we just have spiritual schizophrenia. So okay. Any other points?
I want to give a comment on this. The demon brahmanas, but nowadays we see, especially in India, the materialistic so-called born brahmins, but the Vaidic ritualistic people, I'm not into any devotional activities, they can also be categorized into this and promote just the economic related things and nothing related to Krishna or the devotional activities. We have people like that who are just behind the money.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking about when I was reading demonic brahmanas.
Okay. O master of speech, by your effulgence full of religious principles, the darkness of the world is dissipated, and the knowledge of learned persons or great souls is manifested. Indeed, no one can surpass your effulgence, for all things, manifested and unmanifested, gross and subtle, superior and inferior, are but various forms of you that are manifested by your effulgence. Jagat, you want to read?
Without illumination, nothing can be seen, especially in this material world. The illumination in this world emanates from the effulgence of Sudarshana, the original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illuminating principles of the sun, the moon, and fire emanate from Sudarshana. Similarly, illumination by knowledge also comes from Sudarshana, because with the illumination of Sudarshana, one can distinguish one thing from another, the superior from the inferior. Generally, people accept a powerful yogi like Durvasa Muni as wonderfully superior, but if such a person is chased by a Sudarshana Chakra, we can see his real identity and understand how inferior he is because of his dealing with the devotees.
Hmm. So what are the points?
Not to go by the outfits, so just look at the qualities.
Good. Anything else?
Discrimination factor, where knowledge is required to discriminate between good and bad or inferior to superior. I don't know how it comes from Sudarshan. Generally, we have read this in Bhagavad Gita also. Knowledge is important. The question is, how can we relate it to Sudarshan?
What's the question?
The question is, we have read knowledge is important and regarding the Nyanayoga things and Bhagavad Gita's face, but how it is coming from Sudarshana or Is it just because of the terminologies?
No, because the analogy is given that what is the banner head of the Back to Godhead magazine? Back to Godhead, but then what's the caption which is underneath? Godhead is light, darkness is nescience. Wherever there is Godhead, there will be no nescience. It's pretty much to that effect. That's what it says. It says, back to Godhead. It says, Godhead is light, darkness is nescience. Where there is Godhead, there is no nescience, like that. So, in other words, wherever God is, there is illumination. The Sudarshan, as described in this chapter, the chakra is the source of the light of the sun, the source of the light of the moon, the source of the light of any luminary. It's coming from God, from Sudarshan, from his potency. So wherever there is light, there cannot be darkness. Right? So you see when the sun comes up, the thieves, right, the nefarious activities, the mode of ignorance, the tamasic activities, they dissipate. Because there is light there. Wherever there is light, there is goodness. So the point which is being made here is that the culmination of knowledge is humility. Because if you're very learned, you know a lot, but you're not humble, then you don't have vigyan, or you don't have realization of your knowledge. So you see, some people are very learned. Like here, Devasa, he's extremely learned because he's a great muni, a famous sage, extremely learned Vedic Brahmana, but he lacks humility. So then what is the point of having so much knowledge, being a great jnani, a greatly learned person, if you don't have humility, practical humility? So that's the point. So the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us the culmination of all of our knowledge is to develop humility. Krishna mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita. He says the items of knowledge, and he stresses that I think it might even be the first item of knowledge, it is humility. If you don't have humility, then what is the culmination of all of your learning? What have you actually learned? What have you imbibed? So Devasa, he becomes humbled through this pastime. So, any points? Okay. Indi Fati Gavu. How do you say it? Yeah, normally I can say it, but it's not coming off my phone. Indi Forgettable. That's not how you say it. Anyway, I can't say it. For some reason, it's not coming off my tongue. You can read it there. Oh, Indi Fati Gabo 1. Yeah, that's not how you say it. You're reading it. When you are sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to enter among the soldiers of the Daityas and Danavas, you stay on the battlefield and unendingly separate their arms, bellies, thighs, legs, and heads. O protector of the universe, you are engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his all-powerful weapon in killing the envious demons. For the benefit of our entire dynasty, kindly favor this poor Brahmana. This will certainly be a favor for all of us. If our family has given charity to the proper persons, if we have performed ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices, if we have properly carried out our occupational duties And if we have been guided by learned Brahmanas, I wish in exchange that this Brahmana be freed from the burning caused by the Sudarshan Chakra. So, one of the main points of this pastime, of this chapter, is that devotees are extremely kind-hearted. That's the nature of a devotee. The antithesis of a devotee is a demoniac person who is selfish and cruel. So it is the nature of a devotee, of a devoted, devotional personality, of a sadhu, to be kind, naturally. So this is the nature of Maharaj Ambarish. Even though he's been offended by Devasa, but he's saying to the Lord, to Sudarshan, he's saying, please forgive him. He's begging for the Lord to intercede. Forgive his offenses. If we have done anything, if we have given charity, if myself and my forefathers have worshipped you properly, if we've done proper devotional activities, if we've at all pleased you in any way, then please forgive this personality. Yeah? So that is the nature of a devotee. In other words, he does not hold enmity towards others. And that is the entire lesson of the Bhagavatam in one sense, one of the most important lessons of the Bhagavatam, is that to understand Krishna, you must be Niyamatsara. Niyamatsara means unenvious. If you're envious, you can't go back to Krishna. You have to become free from envy. That is the purport of the Bhagavatam. So you see Maharaj Ambarish, he's showing us the perfect example of a devotee. He's free from envy. Therefore he transcends. He's already liberated. He's already transcendental. And he's much more powerful than Devasa. That's what's pointed out in this pastime. Any points? Where are we up to? Number 11? If the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second, who is the reservoir of all transcendental qualities, and who is the life and soul of all living entities, is pleased with us, we wish that this Brahmana, Devasa Muni, be freed from the pain of being burned. Shukadeva Goswami continued, when the king offered prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra, and Lord Vishnu, because of his prayers, the Sudarshan Chakra became peaceful and stopped burning, the Brahmana known as Devasa Muni. So it's interesting here. How does Devasa Muni become liberated? How does Devasa become liberated? Yeah, by the prayers of Ambarish Maharaj. So what's the lesson? The lesson of Bhagavatam is teaching us. For us to become liberated from this material energy, we need the blessings of Vaishnavas. Without the blessings of Vaishnavas, you can't get liberated from the material. You'll always stay bound. Because we're not powerful enough by our sadhana to transcend the material energy. It's not possible. Our sadhana is, very rare devotees, some very powerful devotees will have such exceptional sadhana that they'll transcend this material world. But most of us, we're bound by the material energy. So therefore we need the blessings of the devotees, of the Vaishnavas, and that will allow us to transcend the material world once and for all. So how did Devasa get out of the material energy? Ambarish blessed. Right? He prayed on his behalf, and then on behalf of Devasa, Ambarish prayed, and then the Lord gave some mercy. That's the system. The Lord's mercy follows the devotee's mercy. One who says he's my devotee, he's not my devotee. But one who says he's the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So we have to surrender to the devotees. Please, the Vaishnavas. Any points? Devasa Muni, the greatly powerful mystic, was indeed satisfied when freed from the fire of the Sudarshan Chakra. Thus he praised the qualities of Maharaj Ambarish and offered him the highest benedictions. Devasa Muni said, my dear king, today I have experienced the greatness of devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For although I have committed an offense, you have prayed for my good fortune. Was that 13 and 14? For those who have achieved the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the pure devotees, what is impossible to do? And what is impossible to give up? So what did Prabhupada say about impossible? It is a word in a fool's dictionary. So Prabhupada said impossible. Famous pastime. When Prabhupada was with us, he wanted the Chaitanya Charitamrita printed. So Prabhupada was translating. This was 1975. So Prabhupada at that point, he translated the, I think he's up to around about canto maybe 6 or so, if you look at the Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada was in the middle of translating the Bhagavatam. Simultaneously, he was traveling the world and preaching and initiating thousands of followers. And then in the middle of all of that, and around end of 1974-75, he begins translating the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So then Prabhupada was translating at a very rapid pace the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then he said to the devotees, what is the problem? You're not keeping up with my translation. I am translating, but the books are not coming out. So he was walking on the beach with Rameshwar. I think it was in Los Angeles, I think. He was on, or maybe San Francisco. He's on the beach walking. They're on a morning walk. And then Prabhupada turned to Rameshwar, who was in charge of the BBT at that time, printing Prabhupada's books. He said, I want the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita printed in 2 months. Yeah? And Rameshwar just stopped. He thought Prabhupada was joking. And he looked and he saw Prabhupada was serious. He said, Prabhupada, that's impossible. And Prabhupada put his cane into the sand and looked at him. And he said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And then Prabhupada just walked off. And then Rameshwar was just left standing there. Right? And immediately he understood Prabhupada was serious. So he went straight back, got in the car, drove straight back to the BBT, and said, we have to have the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita printed and published in 2 months. So devotees went on a 24-hour marathon for 2 months, 24 hours a day. There were devotees up all night painting. If you look in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, all the art, right? Devotees were painting, devotees were editing, devotees were typesetting. Right? Everything was being done. 2 months, and then the whole thing was done in 2 months. So for a devotee, nothing is impossible. If you surrender to Krishna, nothing is impossible. It is only us who limit our devotional service. Any points? What is impossible for the servants of the Lord? By the very hearing of His holy name, one is purified. So this is mentioned in the Canto 6 of the Bhagavatam. What is the first pastime in Canto 6? Ajamil. The pastime of Ajamil. Now, the Acharyas point out, why is that pastime in the middle of the Bhagavatam? There are 12 cantos, right? The 6th canto is the middle. Why is the Ajamil pastime in the middle?
To highlight the potency of the holy name.
Yeah, to give emphasis on the holy name. So one of the main purposes of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is to glorify the chanting of the holy name. So you see the initial verses, there's many initial verses in the early part of the first canto. All the way through the Bhagavatam, it is reiterated. In the second canto, the 11th verse of the first chapter, I believe, is Harinamanu Kirtanam. It describes the entire process of purification which the Bhagavatam is teaching us is Harinam Anu Kirtanam, to chant the holy name of Krishna, following in the footsteps of great acharyas. That is the whole process. So the Bhagavatam emphasizes again and again, there's verses all through the Bhagavatam that emphasize the glory of chanting the holy name. And right in the center of the Bhagavatam is the pastime of Ajamil to highlight to us the importance of chanting the holy name. And then the very, very last verse of the 12th canto, the last verse in the Bhagavatam, glorifies Sankirtan. So the beginning of the book, the middle of the book, all through the book, and the end of the book, they emphasize chanting the holy names of Krishna. So this verse is also saying like that. By the very hearing of his holy name, one is purified. Harinam Sankirtan ki? Jai ho. O King, overlooking my offences, you have saved my life. Thus I am very much obliged to you because you are so merciful. Expecting the return of Devasa Muni, the king had not taken his food. Thereafter, when the sage returned, the king fell at his lotus feet, pleasing him in all respects, and fed him sumptuously. Thus the king respectfully received Devasa Muni, who after eating varieties of palatable food, was so satisfied that with great affection he requested the king to eat also, saying, please take your meal. Devasa Muni said, I am very pleased with you, my dear king. At first I thought of you as an ordinary human being and accepted your hospitality. But later I could understand by my intelligence that you are the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Therefore, simply by seeing you, touching your feet and talking with you, I have been very pleased and have become obliged to you. Jamuna Jiva?
It is said, Vaishnaveda Priya Mudra Vijne Khana Budaya. Even a very intelligent man cannot understand the activities of a pure Vaishnava. Therefore, because Durvasa Muni was a great mystic yogi, he first mistook Maharaj Ambarisha for an ordinary human being and wanted to punish him. Such is the mistaken observation of a Vaishnava. When Durvasa Muni was persecuted by Sudarshan Chakra, however, his intelligence developed. Therefore, the word Atma Medasa is used to indicate that by his personal experience, he would understand how great a Vaishnava the king was. When Durvasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, he wanted to take shelter of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and he was even able to go to the spiritual world, meet the personality of Godhead and talk with him face to face, yet he was unable to be rescued from the attack of the Sudarshan Chakra. Thus he could understand the influence of a Vaishnava by personal experience. Durvasa Muni was certainly a great yogi and a very learned brahmana. But despite his being a real yogi, he was unable to understand the influence of a Vaishnava. Therefore it is said, Vaishnaveda Kriya Mudra Vijne Na Pujaya. Even the most learned person cannot understand the value of a Vaishnava. There is always a possibility of so-called jnanis and yogis to be mistaken when studying the character of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities.
Thank you. So, any points?
Durvasa Muni, even though he had the power to go to spiritual world, meet Brahma, Shiva, and even Lord Vishnu, he could not get protection from any of them. He had to come back to the devotee, the Vaishnava, the greatest Vaishnava, Ambarish Maharaj, whom he offended, to actually save himself. This also shows one pastime where Durvasa himself actually went to Lord Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu to see who is the greatest of all three.
And then
Bhrigu.
Oh, Bhrigu. Okay.
Bhrigu, yeah, that's in the 10th canto.
Yeah, Bhrigu Maharaj. So Bhrigu actually kicks Lord Vishnu in the chest, and still Lord does not mind. But here we can see that if a devotee of the Lord is offended, then Lord will not tolerate. And then the last sentence, it says, a Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities. The greatest example we can see is Srila Prabhupada. Whatever he has done in the span of 10, 12 years, that is just inconceivable. So we can see how much he is favored by the Lord.
Anything else?
Even today we have seen in the temple opening of the hearts of devotees of Jaipata Maharaj. I just felt how much he has touched the hearts of every devotee here. Really, in that such a precarious condition, he is travelling to different places. Initially I felt why Maharaj has to travel at that point of time. But when I heard two of his disciples, they were glorifying that he can't himself stop speaking Bhagavatam. Even he is very sick also, even on the bed, right, sometimes he gives classes. And there is a person who stands by him. Such a compassion. How someone can touch so many thousands of people in the world. Wherever I go, I hear Maharaj glory. Wherever I'm going. What we can comprehend, what we should understand that person, how great.
Any other points? You see in this pastime that Sudarshan, he has chastised Devasa Muni. In other words, he's chased him all through the universe. So the point is, the Bhagavatam is teaching us sometimes, because the nature of the conditioned soul, and all of us are conditioned, is to be proud. Everyone in this material world is proud. Hands up if you are not proud. One person is not proud. Then he changed his mind. Is it transcendental? Schizophrenia. So everyone is proud. That's the nature. Because if you are conditioned, it means you are proud. Pride is a part of conditioning. So why does Krishna arrange for us to be burnt? Because we need the fire of purification to burn up the false ego. Prabhupada explains this. We have to enter the fire of purification. So Sudarshan, who is the Lord himself, the Lord's chakra, he is following Devasa everywhere to burn him. So he feels no relief. So when we are chastised by the Lord, or chastised by the Lord's devotees, it is for our benefit. It is purification. And Prabhupada actually said, an advanced devotee prefers the chastisement to the praise. And my Guru Maharaj, who was with Prabhupada a lot, he said that when you become more advanced as a devotee, you actually can deal with the Guru more on the level of chastisement or correction. Because the Guru can correct you or give you chastisement or give you feedback, and actually you prefer that. The praise you're not so interested in. So that's the nature of when you're becoming advanced, you prefer that you get positive feedback from the devotees, or chastising sometimes. Devotees will correct you. But that is for our benefit. So if we're serious about Krishna consciousness, then when a devotee corrects us, we'll appreciate the correction. And we'll take it on board, and we will rectify our behavior and our mood, our character. So Maharaj Devasa, he was Devasa Muni, he was chastised by the Sudarshan Chakra, but then he became purified, and his consciousness became rectified. So that is the purpose. If everything is too, if we're always receiving compliments, or we always want everything to be nice in devotional service, you won't make advancement very quickly. If you cannot accept chastisement, and if you're not happy to accept chastisement and improve, you can't improve as a devotee. you'll stay a neophyte forever. Because that's not the nature of devotional service. That's not reality. Reality is that you understand that the person who is chastising you has affection for you. That's why they're chastising. And you understand that actually, the person who is chastising you, they're chastising you out of affection, and it is not so intense. I remember one time my spiritual master, just in that room just there, now it's the reception, used to be a dining room, we used to serve the sannyasis there. So I was serving my guru. And he was getting very heavy on us. My spiritual master was much heavier than, you know, I think any of the other gurus or devotees in ISKCON, much heavier. But then he said to us, he said, you think I'm heavy? He said, you know, if you had been with Prabhupada, he said, people had this idea that Prabhupada was very soft. He said, Prabhupada wasn't at all like that. Prabhupada was extremely demanding, and his close associates, very demanding. He was very sweet and very soft, but he was incredibly demanding. So my Guru Maharaj, he was chastising us. He said, you think that's heavy? He said, you should have been chastised by Prabhupada. That was actual heaviness. So when a devotee corrects us, then we should take it in the right spirit. The devotee is doing that because he has affection for us and they want to help us to improve in our devotional service. Any points?
Even if one can transcend the material world and go to the spiritual space, but still without a Vaishnava blessings, you will not be able to stay there. You will surely be. Because you can see in this how can
be. What's the point?
Even if one is able to transcend the material world and is able to go to the spiritual world, but he will not be able to stay there and he will be kicked out by some means. If he does not have a Vaishnava blessings, is that the right statement?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hypothetical because we're not going to get to the spiritual world very quickly. So what's the point? The point is, to get to the spiritual world, you have to be pure.
Yeah.
You have to develop prema. You have to be, you know, extremely pure, it's extremely selfless. Bhagavatam says, ahoituki apratihata. Your devotional service has to be uninterrupted and unmotivated. So is your devotional service, is it uninterrupted, is it unmotivated? So then we're talking about, you know, it's very hypothetical. First get to the spiritual world. First just go to Mangalati, that's enough. If you can do that, then maybe you'll go to the spiritual world. Most of the time you can't even get out of bed in the morning, so. And what we're talking about the spiritual world is very hypothetical at this point in time, so. Okay. Any other points? Okay. All the blessed women in the heavenly planets will continuously chant about your spotless character at every moment. And the people of this world will also chant your glories continuously. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus being satisfied in all respects, the great mystic yogi Durvasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king. Through the skyways he went to Brahmaloka, which is devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. Devasa had left the place of Maharaj Ambarish, and as long as he had not returned for one complete year, the king had fasted, maintaining himself simply by drinking water. I mean, this is unimaginable. How does any human being not eat and drink for 1 year? How does any human being live on water for 1 year? You can't even live on water for 1 day. You can't even live on water for half an hour. So how are you going to live on water for 1 year? Very difficult. So this shows the power, the potency of Maharaj Ambarish, his sincerity. He was so sincere, he thought, I've offended this Brahmana, I will stay here until the Brahmana comes back. So many, many things in the Bhagavatam cannot be, how do you say it? Now, many things cannot be imitated in the Bhagavatam, in the Mahabharata. Just like what did Gandhari do? Right? When she found out she was marrying Dhritarashtra, what did she do? Right? She blindfolded herself. Right? Can you imagine any woman doing that in this day and age? She finds out her husband is blind and then she blindfolds herself so she doesn't feel superior to her husband. Right? So these are examples which we cannot follow, but the principle is being set. What's the principle? We should respect our guests. That's the point. Can we fast for a year? No. Can we fast for a day? No. Maybe.
Only on Janmashtami.
Only on Janmashtami. Which verse are we on?
24.
Yeah. After 1 year, when Devasa Muni had returned, King Ambarish sumptuously fed him with all varieties of pure food, and then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the Brahmana, Devasa, had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful. But he did not take any credit, for everything had been done by the Lord. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that a devotee has to remain busy in Krishna consciousness. Right? Always busy. A devotee always wants to be engaged in service. He's always looking for service to do to Krishna. And then Prabhupada points out that in the course of doing your service, you will always encounter interruptions and disturbances and difficulties, because that is the nature of the material world. It's always difficult. Nothing is easy in this material world. Everything is always difficult. From Lord Brahma, Abrahmana, Bhuvana, Loka, Krishna says in Gita, from the highest place to the lowest place, everything is difficult. So a devotee just tolerates and he continues to serve Krishna under all circumstances. And then Prabhupada points out that everything turns out auspicious for a devotee. If you just tolerate, keep doing your service, tolerate the difficulties and keep serving Krishna, then Prabhupada points out everything turns out auspiciously in the end. Just like for Maharaj Ambarish, how did everything turn out? Yeah, because him and Devasa became friends. Prabhupada says this in the purport. In the end, him and Devasa were friends. Right? In the beginning, Devasa wanted to kill him. Right? He took a piece of hair from his head and threw it on the ground to create a demon. You know, sometimes people look at us like that. Like they just want to burn us into ashes. Right? They take a hair and they just... Like that. So they were enemies, but then they became friends. So everything, if you just keep doing your service, tolerate the difficulties, then everything becomes auspicious for a devotee. Due course of time. In this way, because of devotional service, Maharaj Ambarish, who was endowed with varieties of transcendental qualities, was completely aware of Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus he executed devotional service perfectly. Because of his devotion, he thought even the topmost planet of this material world no better than the hellish planets. So a devotee sees this world properly. What is the nature of this material world? Dukkala yam ashashvatam. Ashashvatam means it is temporary. Dukkala yam means it is miserable. That's the material world. Right? Does anyone have that experience? Does anyone know what I'm talking about here tonight? It's temporary and it's miserable. That's the material world. So a devotee sees it as it is. This is what the Bhagavatam says. The very first of the Bhagavatam says, the Bhagavatam is teaching us to distinguish between reality and illusion. That which is temporary, that which is permanent. That is the difference. So that is the lesson of the Bhagavatam. So because the devotee sees everything properly, he has no attachment to this world. Ambarish Maharaj was a king, not just a king, but he was an emperor of the universe, but he had no attachment to it. Why? Because he saw it all as simply temporary. And when you see it as temporary, then you understand it for what it is, and then you become detached. And you become absorbed in ananda, spiritual bliss. Srila Shukadeva Goswami, thereafter, because of his, continued, thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarish, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property amongst his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudeva. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, whether you're in this material world like a king or a grihastha or a devotee who is materially, or whether you renounce and go to the forest, either way you are liberated. Because if your mind, your words and your thoughts are in Krishna's service, then you have no attachment to this material world. So regardless of our position, we're not in this material world. Whether we're a brahmachari or a grihastha or a sannyasi or a vanaprastha, if we're absorbed in Krishna's service, then we're liberated. Anyone who chants this narration or even thinks of this narration about the activities of Maharaj Ambarish certainly becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. So if you just think about it, even if you don't read it, but you just think about this pastime, it purifies your consciousness. That's the potency of the Bhagavatam. That's why we must Srimvatam Swakata Krishna. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. We must hear this regularly because it purifies, gives us in a purified state of consciousness. By the grace of the Lord, those who hear about the activities of Maharaj Ambarish, the great devotees, certainly become liberated or become devotees without delay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Bhakti Vaibhava Vedanta ki, Joini Doi Gopremanam, Maharaj Ambarish ki.